This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. So how did North Garden's Beth Neville Evans come to spend the last 12 years deeply involved with the Guatemalan municipality of San Mateo Ixtatán?
They discovered me in a way, well, not they, but a young man named Sebastian had a AV malformation on the side of his head, gigantic, looked like an ugly, ugly, ugly tumor. He lived up in a village near San Mateo, in a village with no road, you know, just really, really in the hinterlands. And another guy, Manuel, who worked for an organization that does they build schools up in that area of the mountains of Guatemala, just met him on the path one day and took a picture of him and said, what happened to you? And took a picture, sent it back to someone who happens to live in Charlottesville that I didn't know, but we had a mutual friend. At that time, I had just gotten on the Dave Matthews Horton Foundation board because I'd gotten to know David through his sister, Jane, and she used to work for me. And when they created the foundation, they asked me to be on the board. And so this friend, Vicky, brought me these pictures to church one day and said, do you think you could help this guy? Because I was in our little church. I made an announcement saying, this is a new foundation, and we don't have a specific purpose yet or focus. So let me know. Maybe there's something that, you know, we could give money to that, you know, you're interested in. So she came to me with this picture that happened like right then. So I said, oh, let me see what I can do. And I had been having something like doubts about my work. I had been working for 20 years as a dressmaker. I was a little, not bored exactly, but I felt like my life was missing some kind of maybe spiritual depth or something. And when my children were like 13, 14, the four of us went on a church mission trip to a border town in Mexico, Reynosa, which is the border with McAllen, Texas. And that was about the best week of my life. And it was a great family vacation, you know, working on a house, cinder block house. And that had happened about 4 years. That was probably 1995.
Renovating?
No, we built it from scratch and, you know, the worst building ever made. But maybe not. No, probably not. But those church home building projects, they're really for the people that go down there. I think they're for us, white Americans. But that had happened in like 1995, and that sort of set in motion, I think, a desire within me to do something besides make clothes for rich Charlottesville people. You know, John's an artist. His clients are almost all wealthy. Most of my clients were wealthy, and they're wonderful people. But I think I just wanted to do something more that I could point to and say, look, I did some good, I don't even know if it was that so much as I think we all have a need to serve people that, you know, to serve others. I think that's a need. I don't think that's just something that.
And you were willing to shake your life up a little bit to.
Well, I wanted to.
You wanted to shake your
life up. I think, and that came in combination with having sewn for 20 years. And I was a little, you know, it was either get much bigger as a dressmaker and do grand things with that. I don't know what that would have been, but, or do something different. And so when I got to be on the Horton Foundation, that was really, really fun because we got to see all these different needs. You know, we got to get letters of grant proposals and stuff. And so I got this picture of Sebastian and I took it to the board and we said, let's try to find a doctor in Costa Rica. It would be cheaper, but maybe the medical treatment would be more sophisticated than in Guatemala because he had been to doctors in Guatemala and they just couldn't fix it. We didn't even know what was wrong with him.
You just had a photograph.
We just had a picture, yeah. And so we decided to give them $20,000 and I don't know where we came up with that figure. I found a doctor through my Spanish teacher. I was taking Spanish at Piedmont and she helped me somehow locate a doctor, who we knew nothing about. And so Manuel called me. Manuel is the guy that was working for the other organization, called me and said, "What? Don't you want to come down and meet him? We're going to go down to Costa Rica. He's going to get operated on. Then we'll go back to Guatemala. You can come you can come with us." I said, sure, that'd be fun.
Had you traveled in similar places?
Well, I grew up in Japan, but the childhood, the Japan of my childhood turns out not to be that different from the Guatemala of today.
And how come you grew up in Japan?
My parents were missionaries.
Okay.
And so I was born in Japan and lived there till I was 16. And we were in a small town, and looking back, it really, you know, people carried things on their backs. All the road works, public works were done by hand. You know, there were no machines. And that's similar to the way that it is in Guatemala today, at least in the mountains. So, but I hadn't done that since I was young. And I had had one semester of Spanish. And that didn't help me at all.
Better than no semester, don't you think? Maybe?
Maybe, but it might have just been frustrating. Anyway, so I flew down to San Jose, went to the hospital, and a half an hour after we got there, the doctor came in and said, there's no hope for this guy. Nothing can be done. He's going to die in 2 years. And it was an AV malformation. It's when arterial blood goes through a vein, and the vein's walls are not strong enough to withstand the pressure of arterial blood. So they grow. They swell up, and then they involve gradually more and more blood vessels. So it was going to burst. It had already started bursting. It would just start. It would pump blood.
And that's what was on the side of his face. It was just big blood.
Engorged veins.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there were two dangers. One was to his heart, which was working too hard.
Yep.
Yeah. So we all got very depressed, and we flew back to Guatemala the next day.
With him?
Mm-hmm, the three of us. And that was the original plan. He was going to have his operation. We were going to
return in triumph.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And on the way over there to Guatemala, I said to Manuel, I sure would like to go visit Sebastian's home. He said, you can't. It takes 3 days to get there, 3 days to get back, and your flight's in, 3 days. But he said, we didn't use that money for the operation. We could take a helicopter. So we did.
Thank you, Dave Matthews.
Right. So my first trip. And at the time, we went to his village, which was not San Mateo Ixtatán. He is from San Mateo, but he was living from there. So we landed in these Mayan ruins, and there was a big storm coming. We were all heartbroken. We thought Sebastian was going to die. Landed in these ruins, and with pyramids around.
Yeah,
ancient ruins. Hundreds of beautiful Mayan children that came to see the helicopter. It's another thing that you can't get too much of those beautiful children anywhere, but man. And there was a storm coming, so we could only stay 5 minutes. So I got this sort of photographic image.
I could see you.
Emblazoned in my, really on my heart, I think.
I could see you when you first started talking about it. You were there and you were looking again. Yeah.
Well, it's a spectacular place. It's sitting on the edge of a steep mountain, and I think it's there because they have salt.
Is this San Mateo we're talking? What are we talking
San
about?
Mateo Ixtatán, yeah. We took him there because his wife was waiting by the phone. There were some phones in San Mateo at the time. There were 8 phones. Now everyone has a cell phone in those days. So that's why we went there, just dropped him off and left. And I got his MRI records and his angiogram records and took them home with me. And when I told David Matthews that I was going to maybe try to find a doctor here, he said, well, I'll pay for it.
Sebastian was eventually operated on successfully. He lived with Beth Neville and her husband, John, who's an artist, during the 10-month process.
That whole time, after those 5 minutes in San Mateo, I was trying to figure out what I could do to get me back.
To that place.
To there, because I wanted to be able to have a reason to go back.
Describe the picture that's in your heart of this place that you saw for 5 minutes, if you can.
It's a promontory. This is if you can picture a mountain community that's sort of spread over several coves and ridges.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing flat in the whole town, so the one flat place is this old Mayan playing field. But that's where we landed, and that's just at the edge of one of them with these gorgeous, really big cedar trees, or something like cedar. Stella, a pyramid that's about 30, 40 feet long and high, steep, green. But then all around it, it's very urban. It's a city. I mean,
in this inaccessible place.
Well, it's not all that inaccessible. It's a 12-hour bus ride from Guatemala City, and all of Guatemala is about the size of Tennessee. So you're going 400 kilometers, and it takes you 12 hours.
When you say it's a city, What does that mean?
To me, that means there's not all the buildings are close together. There's not front yards. The road goes right up to the edge of the people's houses. And there are 20,000 people living there. There's a mayor and a health center and 10 elementary schools. But they had never had a high school. And that's what eventually became the focus of the foundation. Sebastian apparently there's many communities, many municipalities. They're called municipios, which means it's like a county, you know, with a county seat. There's many of those in Guatemala that don't have high schools. Fewer now. A lot. The government's been putting in high schools, but at the time, I think it was not uncommon. But when I heard that, I was just kind of surprised. He was talking about something else, and it came up that there had never been a high school.
What were 20,000 people doing there to stay alive?
There have been subsistence farmers until about that time, about 12 to 15 years ago. Most of them are subsistence farmers.
In hilly land.
There's a lot of land, though, in San Mateo, and it's community-owned, and the people have the right to go out and farm it. Plus, they have their own family land, too. So even since I've been there, the population has grown. It was probably 10,000 then. And about 12, 15 years ago, they started sending their young men or the young men on their own. I don't know how it started. Started coming to the States to work, to send money home. And now the economic driver is definitely the remittances. That's what that money is called, remittance. And it's a huge amount of money, millions of dollars. I don't know how many. We don't know how many millions. We don't know how many people there are here, but there's probably 3,000 to 7,000.
And are they here? Do they have trouble getting in?
They cross the desert, mostly cross the desert.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all.
So they're
not all, but 90% undocumented.
So there is no solid economic base.
No,
it's just people clumped together.
That's one of the challenges. I think a long time ago, and the reason the community is there is because of the salt. There's saltwater deposits. I guess that this place was by the sea at some point, hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many thousands of years ago. But there's saltwater wells, and they sold the land, the salt, and they were on the Aztec trading route. So that's why I think these Mayan ruins are fairly significant. It's an old, fairly, it was well-to-do at one point.
Beth Neville eventually formed a nonprofit foundation to promote socioeconomic development of San Mateo Istatan through greater access to education. You can hear more of my conversation with Beth Neville, detailing the ups and, yes, the downs of the foundation's existence, on the Spark page at WMRA.org. This September, 12 years and one operating high school after her life-changing five-minute first visit, Beth Neville retired as chair of the Istatan Foundation.
Came because I was 45. And I thought, I'll be 65. That's a good long time, but I don't, I want to have a limit. And so I set it up in my mind that way. And then that became kind of a mantra or a vision and part of our mission, because I saw in my work, I would come across many other nonprofits. There's a lot of them in Guatemala, and too many of them that have been there a long time and still in the hands of Americans. The management, the decision making is made in this country.
Elias Alonso, born, raised, and returned to San Mateo Istatan after a U.S. education, is the foundation's new executive director. You are now the retired director. What's going to be next?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I am sewing again. A little bit, and I'd like to sew maybe 10 hours a week.
Uh-huh.
I love it. I would go back every so often. I'd make a suit for somebody or a wedding dress, and I think, oh, this is so satisfying. You finish this beautiful thing, and then it's gone. You get paid for it, and it's gone, and you're paid for something very specific. You're producing something so easy to identify, whereas all this work I've been doing for 12 years, when I look back on it, it's very easy to see what's happened, but it's not like a dress. It's just a little less specific, but there are some great things. Like, we have kids in medical school in Cuba. Three of our students, 10 of our teachers, 10 of the teachers at the school went to the school. It's so, I mean, that's, those are products you can, products, that's a terrible word, but you can point to it, you know.
Yeah.
But so.
Accomplishments.
Accomplishments. And they're my buddies, you know, they're so fun to have, see them grow up and blossom.
What's happened to you? How are you different?
Well, I think the immediate, every time I would, this, it was really like a doctor could have ordered me to do this and it would have been a smart thing, you know, for a doctor to order me to go to San Mateo for 3 weeks every quarter
for your health.
Because when you're there, your life is really sane. It's really tied to the daily. It takes 2 hours to do your laundry because you do it by hand. And, you know, you have to be careful about drying because it rains a lot. And it, those kind of issues like, okay, now how am I going to get to Huehuetenango? You have to plan it. You can't, everything, I don't even know how to describe this. You're so tied into the world around you, not just the natural world, but the community world. You know, here, if somebody knocked on, I mean, I get irritated if somebody calls me before 9 o'clock in the morning. There, you get knocks on the door at 6 a.m., and if you come to the door with your pajamas on, they say, what? Why aren't you up? Why are you still sleeping? And you feel really ashamed. Money and work don't have the same kind of, they're not tied to your hours the way they are here.
The music you're hearing was recorded by Dave Soldier in San Mateo, Ixtatán. You'll find a link to the Ixtatán Foundation on the Spark page at WMRA.org, as well as some beautiful photographs of the place taken by Tom Cogill. The Spark is a joint production of the WMRA Land Community and the staff of WMRA Public Radio. The Spark's theme music is supplied by the Avant Gardeners of Albemarle County. Terry Ward is our web wrangler. Thanks to Bob, Matt, and Terry for their help. And special thanks today to poet Arby Horsley for telling me about her admired friend, Beth Neville Evans. So how about you? You got a suggestion for me? Well, time's a-wastin'. Please send it along through the Spark page at WMRA.org. I'm Martha Woodruff. It has been a great pleasure to be with you.